Blog Talk Radio.
Comes, blessed souls, blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings. We're alive because we've been blessed to stay alive in Torah Chaim by the Creator, Torah instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into blogtalkradio.com, and we humbly suggest with a higher inner frequency, we call ourselves Soul Class. This happens to be Soul Class 585, Post-Perm Particularities. Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience. With Creator's help, our next broadcast is taking place right now at 6:32 p.m. on March 27th, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unified Soul Actualization. Program content will focus on a reaction to comments made by a national broadcast concerning the Jewish observation of Purim, a historical occurrence observed and written about by the prophets of Israel in the ancient empire of Persia more than 2,300 years ago. The tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Purim and its historical and spiritual implications, and last but not least, the Children of Israel and Children of Noah collaborating to eradicate hatred, jealousy, and competition which is not needed. But in order to start the show, we'll have to turn down the music for Blessed Brother in Soul, Spirit, and Prayer. The president of Beit Mazal, Rav Isaac Baton, Here Comes the Time from his wonderful Generation Redemption album. And every Shabbat you can hear Rav Isaac chant out songs of prayer and acknowledgement of the Creator's benevolence upon this blessed creation. According to the Jewish, North African, Moroccan traditions, fused together with ancient Hebrew, Israelite, Jewish liturgy formulated by the prophets and sages of Israel. Let's get on with the show. And sorry about the revising. Here we go. Okay, blessed souls, that's that. Now, this is a rather impromptu presentation today. I merited to have my wonderful nephew, David Goodman, stay by us since this past Wednesday night, where we initiated the beginning of the Purim holiday. And he was wonderful, and we had a wonderful time together, giving out shalach manis, presents amongst friends, and gifts to the poor, and hearing the Megillah read, and just reveling in the time, and letting him soak in what can be offered for anyone who wants to come to Kesser Krohn Heights, the Kesser Krohn Heights section of Brooklyn, New York, here on Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unified Soul Actualization. So the next day, while some Jews still around the world were celebrating the second day of Purim, which is a subject unto itself, known as Shushan Purim, I was listening to a national broadcast, and I'm still debating whether I should mention this person's name. He is a Jew. He's fairly well known, and he made certain comments which were very insulting to the Torah observant community, comments along the lines that the holiday has no worth. It's a holiday for children, and why aren't the observant Jewish communities today tackling the issues of the day? Which I think he's quite ignorant of what's being tackled and not being tackled by the Jewish Torah observant communities of the world today. Rather focusing on the emphasis of people drinking mashka, which is called moshka, meaning strong drink, which can be wine, say vodka or liqueur or rum or gin, whatever it may be, and saying that he found it worthless to learn about something that happened more than 2,000 years ago when there are contemporary issues to be dealt with. So I want to respond, and I doubt this program will get to his ears. Halavite only should be, because he did in fact have some Torah observant Jew invite him to come to his house when he felt affronted, saying, I don't know you from a hole in the wall, why should I come? I will agree with him on this, in terms of the practice of giving out sweets. A little too much is given out to the children. It should only be that the sweets given out are fruits and matters which are not so inundated with white processed sugar and artificial ingredients and MSG for the more wheat-based snacks. Okay, I can agree with him on that. But to say it has no relevance today and to broadcast to potentially millions of people, Jews and B'nai Noah, across this blessed land called America, United States of America, to me, pays no homage to Creator, does not create any more Jewish unity within our communities, it does not create any more respect for the B'nai Noah, the Gentiles living in this country, and in fact could create enmity among those who feel that why would we, quote-unquote, I won't say quote-unquote, but to sort of paraphrase this well-known national radio host, prod away our time thinking about something that took place 2,000 years ago. So I'd like to give some perspective, blessed souls, based on quoting, calling inspiration from the Talmudic tractate of Megillah, the Jewish code of law, and inspirations which I've managed and hopefully will be successful in gleaning out of a Hasidic discourse that was delivered by the Lubavitcher Rebbe 28 years ago. So here we go. So first of all, blessed souls, we have to understand what Torah means. Torah means instruction. It also can mean law. But if matters were recorded more than 2,000 years ago, they were not meant just to be for those times, meaning there was an instruction which the prophets of Israel recognized would be an instruction for all people for all times, not only the Jewish people. Meaning to understand the psyche of, say, a Haman, who sought to take revenge because he wasn't given proper respect. And throughout the ages, we can learn of people, whether enemies of the Jewish people or enemies of the children of Noah, who were not accorded what they considered to be their proper portion of respect, and then would exact outright violence and outright revenge against those they felt had slighted their honor. But I want to start us off with this continuing dialogue, hopefully from now and into the future, and it should only be that these words should reach the ears of this national radio host who happens to be a Jew himself, although by what means he defines his Jewishness, I'm not sure by some of the statements he makes. We have to understand, when the time of the Megillah Esther, the story of Esther, literally the letter that was written in her days, she was the queen of Persia, that Israel was living, for the most part, aside from the cities they dwelt in, the majority of people were living in agricultural settings. And it was with that sensitivity in mind, the sages of Israel, after employing that this event should become a national holiday, which we'll be reading from at the end of today's program, that not everyone lived in cities. In fact, we can safely assume that most people in those days, because it was way, way before the Industrial Revolution, and how much more so way, way, way before the Technological Revolution or the modern age of communication, most people lived the humble lives of farmers, or say fishermen, or hunters of game. So therefore, it wasn't so easy to gather together in congregations to hear the reading of the Megillah, which is part of this holiday celebration. And the very first teaching from the Talmudic tractate of Megillah is our sages, or this is really the decision by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbeinu HaKodesh, our holy teacher, who was a direct descendant of Kings David and Solomon, to collate the oral tradition to assist those who might not necessarily be able to hear the reading of the Megillas Esther on the 14th of Adar, which we just passed. It's not the 17th of Adar, or even on the 15th of Adar. So an option was given that for those who lived in villages and they were the providers of produce for the cities where they would conduct their business to sell their produce or other wares, they could come in as early as the 11th of the month of Adar, 3 days before the traditional reading of the Megillah, or they could come on the 12th day of Adar, on the 13th, which is traditionally held as the day of fasting, which you'd have to learn more about that from the Code of Jewish Law. I don't want to get too much in that matter. And who, or the 14th, or the 15th. Now, the 14th, the 15th was basically intended for those who are already living in larger congregations, but to be reading and or hearing the Megillah amongst other congregants was designed with sensitivity towards those who lived outside cities and lived in more rural settings. Now, who ordained this? None other than a prophet himself, Ezra the scribe, who was a Kohen, also known as, he was a Navi, he was a prophet. And in fact, there's a book called the Book of Ezra. Now, not only would these villagers or farmers, or those who are involved in, say, hunting game, or those who are involved in various occupations which require them to live outside the city borders or with the convenience of living inside a city, they would normally come in on Mondays and Thursdays. So Ezra ordained, again, this was a prophet, this was a Kohen, this is Ezra's scribe, and again, a book was named after him, the Book of Ezra. He ordained, court should sit in session on Mondays and Thursdays. Thus, villagers who lacked local courts would assemble in the larger towns on Mondays and Thursdays to have their disputes settled if there was a legal matter to be disputed within the Jewish people. Others explain, oral Torah commentators of great renown, such as the Ritva and Rosh, mention that they would gather in the towns in these days to hear the reading of the Torah, which at this time, for as long as I can remember, we always read with regularity, which is also quoted in the Book of Jewish Law, as originally, I believe, being a decree of the mighty Moses, the Levite prophet, that he did not want Israel to go 3 days without reading the Torah. So during a regular week in the creation, we hear the Torah read on Monday and Thursday and on the Holy Shabbat. There are other periods of time when we can hear it read every day, say during the time of Hanukkah, the time of Pesach, the time of Sukkot. Now, going on with the explanation according to oral Torah tradition that not everyone knew how to read the Megillah. And many times these villagers, these farmers, these hunters, these gamers, these fishermen, these people who lived on the outskirts of larger big cities, even small cities, medium-sized cities, would not know how to read the Megillah. and they needed someone who lived in the town where there was more likely a more organized form of education and transmission of the traditions amongst the Jewish people to read it for them. So the sages granted them permission to have the Megillah read to them when they came to town on the day of assembly, which would be on a Monday and Thursday, and this saved them from having to return to the town on Purim Day. Now, we have to remember as well, blessed souls, you know, over 2,000 years ago, people didn't have SUVs. There weren't community buses, as there are in certain cities. Like, say, here in New York City, some people live in Muncie, some people live in Staten Island. In order to get to Brooklyn or Manhattan, they take a bus into the city. No, you had to either walk into the city, or you had to take, if you were wealthy enough, you'd build a wagon or buy a wagon from a craftsman, and you'd hook it up to an ox, or you'd hook it up to any sort of animal that was capable of, or a camel or something that was a donkey, something that was strong enough to bring you from point A to point B. Now, as well, there was a certain sensitivity towards when the Megillah could not be read, and the Megillah could not be read on the Holy Shabbat, because it's an issue which concerns what is known as an Av Malacha, a forbidden activity of a type of work called carrying on Shabbat. And the sages of Israel had ruled that we should not read the Megillah on Shabbat. And therefore, if the 14th and if the 14th fell out on a Shabbat, then you'd have to read it not on the Friday, because that was right before Shabbat. You would read it on the 12th, which was Thursday, which again goes back to the original teaching of this Mishnah. So that gives us a little backdrop, but it says, even though traditionally speaking it's on the 14th and 15th the Megillah is read, there was a time period where it could be read at an earlier junction time based on the needs of the people living within the context of an agricultural society. And eventually that was decided by later day sages in relation to when that decree was originally made by Ezra and those who followed in his footsteps, to eventually stop that practice, because we started slowly but surely weaning ourselves away from being more agriculturally based as societies and more city dwellers, or, so to speak, villagers, where smaller villages or larger villages did not necessitate that so many of our people would have to come in early to hear the reading of the Megillah. So, with that being said, revisiting Mishnah at the beginning of the Talmudic tractate of Megillah, where again we can read it on the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, the 15th, Lubavitcher Rebbe from 28 years ago mentioned that we must take note of the fact that there are 5 days that Israel in ancient days could read from the Megillah. But what's the instruction? Even though today we can only hear the Megillah on the 14th or 15th, the enumeration of the 11th and the 12th and the 13th and the 14th and the 15th actually adds up to the numerical value of 65. Simply just add up the numbers. 11 plus 12 equals 23. Plus 13 equals 36. Plus 14 equals 50, plus 15 equals 65, which lo and behold adds up to the what is known as the Torat Gamatria of one of the divine names of the Creator. Aleph, and then followed by a Dalet, and then followed by a Nun, and then followed by a Yud. Now, in another particular Hasidic discourse said by the Rebbe 23 years before he said this discourse, he discussed this matter more in full, and for those of you who can access this teaching in the Hebrew, which I I'm not aware of this teaching being translated to English. You can learn about the significance of these 5 days by which the Megillah could be written, read, I should say, read on, and how it relates to the divine name of Aleph, followed by a Dalet, followed by a Nun, and then followed by a Yud. But what the Rebbe wanted to bring out is, from the accumulation, or the connection, I should say, the direct connection from the first day that we can possibly read the Megillah until the last day we can possibly read the Megillah in the month of Adar, which is the 15th, it's instructive of something way beyond the context of what most people consider is the significance of this teaching from the Mishnah, and certainly how much more so the comments, the terse and yet quite insulting comments made by this national broadcaster who happens to be a Jew, that the fact that we can read from the 11th till the 15th is instructive of a type of general service that has been placed upon our shoulders as the members of the Hebrew Israelite Jewish nation, that we must engage in eliciting and revealing into this world the name of the Creator. And we'll talk about that in a few moments. What does that imply? To elicit and reveal the name of the Creator within this blessed world, to increase the blessings of this world, to increase the bounty of this world, to increase the brotherly or sisterly human love amongst all peoples. Now the 11th day, or the number 11, relates to actually two of the four letters of the ineffable holy name of the Creator, because when you learn of, and now for many of you it will be the first time you're learning about the Vav, which is part of the four letters of the divine name of Creator, it has a numerical value of Vav. And the He that follows it has a numerical value of 5, which adds up to the Torah Gematria of 11, which again is the numerical value or the day, corresponding to the date that we can initially read the Megillah in the month of Adar, even prior to the 14th or the 15th of Adar, 14th being in the cities that were unwalled at the time that the 12 tribes of Israel entered the land of Israel, and the 15th relating to those cities that were walled at the time that Yehoshua ben Nun led the 12 tribes of Israel in the eventual settling of the land, the conquesting of the land. And the Rebbe points out that this numerical value of 11, which corresponds to the Vav and the Hay of the Divine, the Creator, is the beginning of service towards Creator and being in fellowship with other human beings until we reach the completeness of the service, which is alluded to in the fact that we can read the Megillah at the very latest in the walled cities, as per our tradition. The number 15 corresponds to the first two letters of the ineffable holy name of the Creator, the Yud, and then followed by the He, which has the Torah Gematria value of 15, which in and of itself is alluding to that the children of Israel are likened to the moon and are likened to the moon because we are reflecting the light of the sun, just as the physical moon above us reflects the sun's in a complete fashion at the 15th of every lunar calendar month. So what is this beginning of the Avoda connected to the numerical value of 11, which is connected to the two last letters of the divine name of the Creator, the Yud followed by the Hey, followed by the Vav, followed by the Hey? This is the idea of subduing our emotional capacities, whether they be positive emotional capacities, whether they be negative emotional capacities, meaning we react negatively even to positive things, or we just remain emotionally neutral, where we sort of stand at the fork of the road of towards proper emotional attribute expansion or contraction if we don't make the right decision at that point, and subduing our excitement, or our sadness, or our bitterness, or our sense of splendor, or our sense of connection with others, or our sense of might, or restriction with ourselves, towards acts of kindness, acts of righteousness. So this is the beginning of serving Creator. Whatever emotional content that we possess at any one point in time, to subdue the energy connected to our emotional capacities towards a higher sense and responsibility of doing what is right and pleasant in the eyes of the Creator and in the hearts and minds of our fellow human beings. And of course, we humbly suggest to anyone listening, or those who will listen in the archive version, you can learn to do what is right if you learn in our Holy Torah, whether you be of the nation of Israel, as it relates to the 613 commandments, which spawned out of the 10 core commandments, given the famous giving of the Torah, as everyone knows about, the 10 commandments, or the 7 core commandments of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, as they also relate ultimately towards the expansion of service for any human being, towards being in service to Creator and in fellowship with other human beings. Then there's the completeness of the avoda for being human or human being, which relates to the 15th day of Adar, which is the second, the fifth of any particular 5 days that were the Jewish people allowed to hear the Megillah way back when. And the Yud, which is followed by the Hey, which are the first two letters of the ineffable holy name of the Creator, is referring to the cognitive engagement of the human mind. The cognitive engagement of the human mind is of great significance for us to develop a sense of havchanat ha-seichel, to know how to differentiate using our cognitive properties to the best of our abilities, of course, as we're blessed by the Creator, distinguish between good and evil, that which is truth and that which is not truth. So when I hear a national broadcast, which is heard by millions of people, and I checked today before the program on YouTube and the archive version, as it's, I guess it's a podcast now. So potentially 1 million people heard this person denigrate the significance of this holiday. And we've talked about that there is an eternal instruction just by learning out from within the inner dimension of Torah that if you take the first day that one could hear the Megillah and the last day that you could hear the Megillah read, it's alluding to within the Panimus of Torah, the inner dimension of Torah, human development. Of course, there were ideas of human development written in ancient literature, even preceding that which took place and manifested as the story of the Megillah. However, we take significant note of the fact that, again, that this story was recorded and ordained and agreed upon by the sage of Israel, because two prophets, the prophet Mordechai and the prophet Esther, felt this was a message which had eternal implication and forms of implementation, which are, you know, several thousand, more than 2,000 years later, that a direct descendant of King David and Solomon, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, would say, there is what to learn just by the very dates by which one was allowed to read the Megillah in ancient Israel when we were primarily an agricultural society. Now, we're not talking about numerology, blessed souls. We're talking about the hidden instruction, even in numerical values, of Torah facts, data, in particularly the oral Torah tradition. Moving forward into the teaching of the Rebbe, that if we're going to be talking about the general service, as we just mentioned, and revealing the name of Creator in the world, as alluded to, paradoxically in an open fashion by just re-examining the significance of what we can learn out from the four letters of Creator's name. Again, that's the Yud, and then followed by the He, followed by the Vav, and followed by the He. Let's now consider the creation of all the worlds, which, of course, was spelled out plain and simple in the very first verse of the Torah. We're just going to read a part of it. Bereshis bara Elokim. In the beginning, the Creator created. Now, the name that was used for Creator was not the Yud followed by the Hey, followed by the Vav and then followed by the Hey, but another divine name, because Creator has many divine names. In this case, it was Aleph, followed by the Lamed, followed by a Hey, followed by a Yud, then followed by a Mem, or a Mem Sofit, if you like. So I say another name. This is when we talk about the names of Creator. I mean, even in the English language, we see Lord, Creator, God, King of all kings, Master of the universe, or Lord of the universe. But these have subtle implications when they're traced back to their root descriptions in the Lashon HaKodesh, the Holy Tongue. Included within the name of Elohim, this five-letter name of the Creator, which not only implies creation, it's also from an expression of revelation. So even before, as we're going to soon learn, in the first 10 statements where it said, God said, there is no mention of what is considered to be, so to speak, in comparison, in the context in which we're talking about, there is no mention of the divine four-letter name that we talked about earlier. Because at that point in time, Creator wanted us to know that the vehicle by which things are revealed and created is through the divine prism of the divine name of the Aleph, followed by the Lamed, followed by the Kuf, followed by the Yud, followed by the Mem Sofit. And afterwards, after we go into the and read the first chapter of Genesis, we see by the second chapter in Genesis the fusion together of two divine names, the ones we've been talking about. The Yud, followed by the He, followed by the Vav, and followed by the He, and the Aleph, followed by the Lamed, followed by the Kuf, followed by the Yud, and followed by the Mem, where it says, on the day that Hashem, Creator, or God, Creator, made earth and heaven. So now we see a fusion of these two names. That is to say, that not only was there the acknowledgement as written down by Moses, as instructed him by Creator, to mention during the entire first chapter of the book of Genesis, and then to go into the second chapter of Genesis and read verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, and then only till we get to verse 4. We had to wait, so to speak, the human family experience had to wait 35 verses until, in the chronological transmission of the written Torah, we had to wait 35 verses till we see the appearance of this great and ineffable name, the four-letter name, the Yud followed by the He, followed by the Vav, and followed by the He, where again, Moses was told by the Creator to write, on the day that Hashem, or God, Creator, made earth and heaven. That in fact there was a revelation connected to not just the five-letter name of Creator, but the four-letter name. The Rebbe went on to say that, and after all the actions that have taken place, are taking place, and will take place in our divine service in the span of 6,000 years in this world, because we have a unique Torah, oral Torah tradition, which you can learn about from the oral Torah tradition of Rosh Hashanah, which is the oral Torah tradition of how we bring in the new year in the lunar calendar, the 31st page, the first side, that that 6,000 years we are given as part of the human family experience to serve and do what needs to be done, which will eventually lead to the Messianic era. And in particularly in these days of exile, not just the exile of the Jews, but the exile of the Bnei Noach from our proper state of consciousness, the general service towards Creator and fellowship towards other human beings and for the rest of the creation is to reveal, is not only to elicit and reveal, meaning to either make a vertical elicitation or a horizontal elicitation from one state of mind to another state of mind with the recognition and acknowledgement that the Creator's name has so been deemed by Creator himself, that this name is connected to the manifestation and the enlivening and the maintenance of all the worlds and all of the, what we call the Seder HaHishtalshelus, the order of the chaining down of the worlds of all forms of cause and effect. And according to the Torah of the modern Hasidic patriarch, the Baal Shem Tov, this matter is taking place each and every second in a tangible way that we can only be said of Creator, that Creator can create anything starting from uncompounded, unelementary matter, from absolute nothingness and zero, just as the creation was existing before what we would know to be creation. So the Creator was not bound by elements or compounded matter or molecular matter or nuclear matter or protonic matter or electronic matter or whatever you want to, chemistry matter. Creator, in Creator is ultimate wisdom known only to the Creator, because we know it is written as reflected out to us in prophecy by Isaiah, "My thoughts are not your thoughts." That's what Creator told Isaiah, was told to, as an internal instruction to reflect out to all of us, those of us who love to learn the scripture. And these matters are also addressed by the first Chabad rabbi, Rabbeinu Zaken, which he went at length to talk about how there have been people who have been fooled with their human intellect, because the human intellect has not accessed the inner dimensions of Torah, about the difference between Creator's form of creation and flesh and blood's form of creation. And this is a new, well elaborated in a seminal work, which is part of the larger seminal work of the Alter Rebbe known as the Tanya, which is a teaching within the Panimis of Torah, the inner dimensions of Torah, to resensitize the human heart and human mind, and to create easier access towards with the divine image. But by this work called Shahar Yichud V'Amunah, the gateway of unification, or the gate of unification and faith. And again, all these matters are connected to our actions and our service in the times of exile, further deepening and sort of sweetening the implications of our responsibility. The Rebbe wanted us to know in this teaching from 28 years ago, from the Taurus of the Maggid, the Rebbe Dovber of the Maggid of Mezrich, who followed in the footsteps of the Baal Shem Tov, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, based on a teaching, an oral Torah teaching, in the teachings of our sages, known as the teaching of the fathers, Perkei Avos, the second chapter, the first Mishnah, know what is above you, because everything above is coming from you, meaning we affect realms that we are not aware of. But the sages of Israel, in their prophetic and Ruach HaKodesh spirit, divine inspiration, identified for us because they had the ability to do so. Those who purified themselves were able to identify that such manifestations do take place that we do affect. And we see this as part of the discussion in modern human polemic discussions about climate change, global warming, environmental damage, sustainability of the planet. Why is it so hard for human beings to come to grips with the fact that if we can physically observe that which human beings are doing to the planet, and in some places degrading and destroying some small part of the planet that is tied to human action, and some extrapolate out that this is leading to a more cataclysmic type of change, why can't we also come to realize as part of the human family experience, which the debate or the discussion, the dialogue has begun also, to how we can rectify the planet by positive actions which are in sync with some would not identify necessarily as the Creator's plan, which is delineated clearly in the Torah, how to rectify this earth on the economic and ecological level. That we can make changes in the creation, because the creation, so to speak, feeds off of us and we feed off the creation. There's that symbiotic relationship. And not only that, the Rebbe wanted to mention that the essential aspect that we should know from levels of consciousness were way beyond us, quoting from the book of Eov, or Job, or Job, chapter 14, verse 15, cherish your handiwork. Meaning Eov, in his prophetic state, was instructed and empowered by the Creator to understand that the Creator has a great love for that which Creator has created. And therefore we have the unique ability as human beings to become partners in the act of creation. And this was for sure, as the Rebbe pointed out, that which was alluded to in the first writing of the four-letter name of the Creator. Excuse me. The Yud followed by the He, followed by the Vav, followed by the He. Concerning that verse, as we mentioned before, on the day that Hashem, God, Creator, made heaven and earth and heaven, it's with the purpose that we not only maintain the earth, but we reveal upon the earth the name of Creator in the world, which is affected by our actions and our service. And this is a particular type of service, and also compels us to come to grips with the fact that there is a particular, there are many particularities within our service to Creator, which in that particular service, there can be even branching out to the particularities of particularities. Just like with, there is a general intention with all matters of Torah and mitzvahs, that there should be a general intention that we're going to serve by doing a commandment, like saying doing the mitzvah, the commandment of charity. And then there's the particular intention to give sufficient resource to a poor person, or with the intent that this person, or the prayer that this person should ultimately have to stop begging, to encourage him or her with a word of kindness, to encourage that many have come before their their need, and they have been redeemed, and they become givers instead of future takers or receivers. These are very deep matters, blessed souls. And all this should be in a way, as the Rebbe continued, in a way of das, meaning an activation of our sensitivity to the essence of all these concepts, and for us to fix our thoughts in a very firm way upon these matters. However, as it relates to the story of Purim, there is a concept of an opponent to this type of consciousness. And I'll just give you, I'll ask of your forgiveness, but I'm just going to reach out for a Tanakh, which is connected to the conclusion of today's program. Hold on for 1 second. There is a consciousness which is diametrically opposed to everything I've talked about, blessed souls. This is the consciousness of a Malek, which manifested in the form of the protagonist, the evil protagonist of Haman, or Haman, who through his chicanery and perfidy towards not only the Jewish people, but also to his own family and to the members of the Persian Empire, brought about a decree which, if it had been enacted out, would have, heaven forbid, wiped out the Jewish people from the memory of the human family experience. But if you read the Megillah, you'll see that this did not come to take place. But what was in essence, as the Rebbe reflected upon which led to his demise. What was his intent? That the type of consciousness as promoted by Haman or Haman was that he wanted honor. He wanted to receive what we call as kavod. That not only all the Jews should bow down to him as if he was an idol, as if he was, so to speak, a god, but the service of the nation of Israel would be disrupted because the intent of the Amalekite consciousness, which Haman was a direct descendant of an ancient Amalekite king called Agag, to make a separation in the name of Creator, heaven forbid, between the Vav and then followed by the He and then the Yud and the K, meaning the consciousness of Amalek is to disrupt what should be already part of normative human consciousness, to again subdue and redirect our human emotions towards acts of kindness, acts of righteousness, and acts of abstaining from negative activities, whether those activities be of activities of the mind, activities of speech, or activities of action. And how much more so the Amalekite, the Haman persona, is to the promotion, regarding the promotion of dissuading, persuading, brainwashing human beings from engaging in cognitive activity as it relates to the knowledge of godliness. And how the knowledge of godliness, the knowledge of Creator, should be prefaced by, again, quelling our emotions, whether it be positive or negative or neutral, towards a higher end, a higher outcome. And this is why, before we had the story of Purim, the historical event of Purim, there was a prophecy that was given over to a prophet of the nations by the name of Bilam, who in fact himself, although was not of the nation of Amalek, sought to destroy Israel by cursing them. And he prophesied, as Moses prophesied, or was told by the Creator in a prophetic fashion, Amalek is the first among nations, but his end will be eternal destruction. So what we are living for, blessed souls, is towards the destruction of the consciousness of that which would seek to divide up and create period, separation between the four letters of the ineffable name of Creator, which is connected to the revelation of godliness in this world. As it is written in the end of the Torah portion of Bashalach, which you can learn more about by going to the book of Exodus, Shmos, as we call it in Hebrew. In chapter 17, verse 16, for the hand is on the throne of God, Hashem is maintaining a war against Amalek, meaning Creator is engaging in this war against the consciousness of creating the separation, so to speak. No one can truly separate the name. It's like spitting into the air and expecting the spit to reach all the way up to the moon. But so to speak, the Creator empowers we of the Torah observing community, whether we Jews or the blessed children of Noah, which is all the inhabitants of the world, or now the nation of Israel, to so to speak make a spiritual war against those who would create doubts about godliness, doubts about the purpose of creation, doubts about subduing human emotion towards a higher end, subduing those who would dissuade and persuade others from cognitively accessing the divine image. And therefore we also learn, as the Rebbe mentioned out, that it takes a certain particular mentality to be meritorious. As Moses told Joshua in the book of Exodus, Parshat B'Shalach, Yud Zayin, the 17th chapter, 9th verse. Moses told Joshua, choose people for us and go do battle with Amalek. Now, as we mentioned before, Torah is an expression of instruction. In every generation, we see that there is, in fact, an extension, according to the Panimus of Torah, of that of a human. In a more general sense, in a more particular sense, among many people, the sages of Israel, who seek out to encourage others, go battle and do battle. It doesn't have to be physical battle. Go and do battle against those who create doubts about Creator, doubts about the revelation of godliness, doubts about the goodness of the human family experience. Why is it that those who come in the name of whatever ideology or theology or economic system or spiritual system would think that human beings should not develop from point A to point B all the way to point Z is really something I still battle within myself. Why should it be? Because it seems quite apparent that it's just the natural progression of human beings to grow in their emotional capacities, to grow in their intellectual capacity, to grow in their faith-based capacities. But yet, woe unto the human family experience. We still see people are casting doubt upon these endeavors. And so those of us who have the ability and are blessed too, and I take my little molecule of merit to mention that we will not stand idly by while someone gets on national radio, even though I'm not going to mention this person's name, to saying that this holiday has no significance. Why not deal with modern issue A or B or C? I'm not saying we shouldn't get involved in modern issue A, B, and C. Now, before we get to the concluding part of this presentation, which I hope is something that you're finding some sort of spiritual edification from, Blessed Souls, he did make mention of the fact that the people are getting drunk. And I like to say that, in fact, to become intoxicated is part of the tradition connected, but under what context is one supposed to get intoxicated? So I like to read right out of the laws of the condensed presentation of Jewish law in chapter 143, concerning the celebration, the observation of Purim. Since wine served as a catalyst throughout the saga of the Purim miracle, because if you read very carefully what took place, blessed souls, in the book of Esther, which is only 10 short chapters, the king of Persia, at that time the most powerful man in the world, his name was Ahasuerus, his wife, who was a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, who led the first conquering of the nation Israel after the temple was built by King Solomon, his granddaughter Vashti lost her position at a wine fest. Queen Esther was granted her throne, and similarly Haman's downfall came through wine. Our sages obligate us to drink wine and become intoxicated. As the Megillah in the Talmudic tractate of Megillah 7b ordains, a person is obligated to become so drunk on Purim that he does not know the difference between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai. But then the halacha, the tradition, is very careful to redefine this type of drunkenness. At the very least, one should drink more than he usually does to commemorate the great miracle and go to sleep. Thus, while asleep, he will, quote-unquote, not know the difference between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai. As well, the halacha stipulates very clearly, it is preferable that a person whose constitution is weak, and simply a person who knows that becoming drunk will cause him to treat any mitzvah, commandment, blessing, or prayer with disrespect, or will, heaven forbid, lead to irreverence, should not become drunk. As the halacha concludes, one's conduct should be motivated by the principle, as mentioned in the Perkei Avos, the Ethics of Our Fathers, Chapter 2 of Mishnah 12, or your deed should be for the sake of heaven. So you say, blessed souls, when this national radio broadcaster comes out and says that the Jews of the Torah observant community are just getting drunk and forgetting about everything, he doesn't know what it says in the oral Torah tradition. Yes, unfortunately, because there is something called the Yetzer Hara. There are people who have abused the right to become intoxicated on the day of Purim, during the celebratory Purim meal. However, that is not the intent that we should become drunkards. It's the idea as a remembrance that just as this Haman came with this wild behavior, this wild outlook, this wild theological basis, that he should undo the sovereignty of Israel and therefore undo ultimately the settlement of all of creation to be a peaceful and pleasant habitation, that there should be, in place of promoting the subjugation, the subdual of raw human emotion towards a higher goal of acts of kindness, acts of righteousness, and abstaining from negative activities, and then therefore leading to the much more elated service, which really needs to be predicated upon proper emotional capacity expansion and contraction where it needs to be contracted. Then we deal with the cognitive development of the human being as it's directly aligned with the Tzelem Elohim. He thought that what was of greater significance for the creation is that he should be worshipped as a god. And that type of consciousness, we of Israel come to totally come out and say, we do not hold by this ideology. This has nothing to do with the Creator's plan. And this is what we want to erase from the creation, the remembrance of the promoters of doubt. For those promoters themselves, may they return to the Creator. We wish upon them that. And all these matters are manifesting themselves, as we see, for instance, this outrageous act which took place in Pakistan today, where people of another faith, not mine, the Christian faith, at least 55 people, amongst them many women and children, were just killed by those in the name of what they consider to be an act of their God. But it seems to be they're following in the footsteps, again, of a Molech to disrupt the purpose of creation. An open violation of do not kill as well. But with that being said, Blessed, I want to read a mentioning of why we are keeping Purim, and we're taking it within the context of chapter 9, verses 20 through 28. And when we say Mordechai, we're talking about the prophet, the righteous Mordechai, the leader of the nation of Israel at that time, Mordechai Yehudi, Mordechai a Jew. And we'll read it quite simply. Mordechai recorded these events and sent letters to all the Jews who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, the near ones and the distant ones, charging them to observe annually the 14th day of the month of Adar and its 15th day, as the days on which the Jews gained relief from their enemies, and the month which had been turned about for them from one of sorrow to gladness and from mourning to festival, to observe them as days of feasting and gladness, and sending delicacies to one another and gifts to the poor. The Jews undertook to continue that which they had begun, just as Mordechai had prescribed to them. And let's remember this, those Mordechai was a prophet. Continuing on in these verses, for Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, enemy of all the Jews, had planned to annihilate the Jews and cast a lottery, that is a lot, to terrify and to annihilate them. Because when people are being terrified, blessed souls, it's hard to work on your emotional development. It's hard to work on your cognitive development, as we saw from the woeful, hellful events of 70 plus years ago. But lo and behold, as we continue in these verses, when she appeared before the king, meaning Queen Esther, he commanded by means of letters that Haman's wicked scheme, which he had devised against the Jews, should recoil on his own head, and they hanged him and his sons on the gallows. Therefore, they called these days Purim for the word pur. Therefore, because of all that was written in this letter, and because of what they had seen concerning this and what had happened to them, the Jews confirmed and undertook upon themselves and their posterity, and upon all who might join them, as we ask upon all the righteous children of Noah to join us in this fight against doubts, against Creator and the purpose of creation, without fail to observe these 2 days in their prescribed manner and their proper time in each year. And these days should be remembered and celebrated by generation, every family, every province, and every city. And these days of Purim should never cease among the Jews. Now shall the remembrance perish from their descendants. Now this was a matter which was enacted by Mordechai and Esther, the sages of Israel, 2,371 years ago. I ask you, blessed souls, how could this not be a matter connected to Creator, that the events which were not captured on Google, were not, there was no webcam, there was no CNN, there was no NBC, there was no Fox News, there was no Google app. How could it be that the mere writings of this letter of Esther is something which we embrace? Because again, it goes back to the purpose of creation, blessed souls. And anyone who stands against its creation or that consciousness should know that the word of the Creator shall endure, and the words of the Torah shall endure, not in a way that is being expressed by the enemies of human beings today, by certain subgroups within the Islamic faith. Because they should know they're only going in the way of Haman. They're only leading to the destruction of themselves literally and spiritually and figuratively. But they're also incurring among themselves the great, egregious act of weakening faith in the Creator and the plan for all of creation. So that being said, blessed souls, we humbly conclude with, as we like to conclude with our humble efforts, with the music, the wisdom, the emunah of the faith of Brother David Dom, who helped us get back home, to help us realize and internalize, Hatzelem Elokim is no dream. Our divine image will help us get in scrimmage. And may this all manifest in the way of Ahavachad, one love, Gorlachad, one destiny, Kulanu, Badarchi Noam, in a pleasant way, Darchi Noam, in a peaceful way. And the name of this song is called Amuna. And the words and ideas, as in the humility of Rabbi David Dom, is to give it the attribute, the words and ideas to his teacher, someone who I've met personally, is a very nice man, actually a righteous man, a tzaddik. His name is Rabbi Lazer Brody. And this is called Amuna. But before we turn to the words of Amuna and the song of Amuna and the spirit of Amuna, as manifest to us in a mere few moments by David Dombas, so I want to remind you, you've got to do good, because that's part of the creation. Even though it might create anxiety and agita, feelings of whatever it might be within yourself, blessed souls, it's okay. Because the Teva Tov Lahetiv, it's the nature of the good to do good. And the Creator had a great plan. He put you on the earth to help you find out what it's really worth, which you can access by turning to the Eternal Torah, whether you be a member of the nation of Israel or one of the 7 billion plus members of the human family experience, otherwise known as, according to Torah, as the Bnei Noach. And here's Amuna. Take care, everyone. Technical difficulty, just hold on, please. We're holding. Hold on, please, we're going to get to it. Enjoy.
me.